From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
My fellow Americans, on Tuesday, Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad launched a horrible chemical weapons attack on innocent civilians.
That was U.S. President Donald Trump Thursday evening as he announced that the U.S. was striking Syria in retaliation for alleged use of chemical weapons by Damascus.
Using a deadly nerve agent, Assad choked out the lives of helpless men, women, and children. It was a slow and brutal death for so many. Even beautiful babies were cruelly murdered in this very barbaric attack.
Trump announced the unilateral U.S. attack against Syria after failing to obtain support at the U.N. Security Council for a resolution that blamed Damascus for the attack and sought retribution. The U.S. attack on Syria was announced while President Trump was meeting with China's President Xi Jinping. China has taken a strong position against U.S. intervention in Syria. This was China's permanent representative at the United Nations on Wednesday, discussing that resolution, which was presented by the UK.
Thank you, Madam President. China is profoundly shocked by the suspected use of chemicals as weapons that happened a few days ago in Syria, which have resulted in enormous civilian casualties. We strongly condemn any attacks against civilians. China firmly opposes the use of chemicals, the chemical weapons rather, by any country, any organization, or any person under any circumstances. And this has been our consistent position, a position that brooks no distortion, as it is consistent. Within Syria, there have been many instances of the use of chemicals as weapons. China supports the OPCW as well as related UN entities in carrying out comprehensive, objective and fair investigations into all, and I repeat, all uses of chemicals as weapons, so as to, on the basis of substantiated evidence, conclusions that can stand the test of time and facts. It is essential to hold to account all the related perpetrators and responsible parties in cases of chemical weapons. The Syrian conflict has entered its seventh year, already resulting in enormous civilian casualties. China is empathetic with the Syrian people for their sufferings, and we call upon the various Syrian parties to put an early end to the conflict. Political settlement is the only way out of the Syrian question. It is hope of China that all the parties will create conditions for political settlement rather than creating trouble or difficulties. It is hope of China that the international community will capitalize on the rare opportunities offered by the political settlement, persist in the general direction of political settlement, step up its support to the UN as the main channel for mediation, support the work of Special Envoy de Mistura, urge the various Syrian parties to consolidate ceasefire and build up mutual confidence or mutual trust. Stick to the Syrian-led and Syrian-owned principle in the Geneva talks and push for positive results to be achieved in the political settlement process. Counterterrorism is the major urgent topic facing the Syrian question. The International Committee strengthen its coordination, unified standards, and resolutely fight against all the terrorist organizations enlisted by the Council. Lastly, I should point out once again, the UK delegate on this August forum of the Council is openly distorting the position of China. This is not to be tolerated. The position of the UK does not hold water. It is my hope that the UK delegate under question that enjoys international consensus, that is the chemical weapons, will stop abusing the EU Security Council. Doing so will not be in the interest of Syrian people. I will hope that this UK delegate will refrain from such practice in the future. Thank you.
Syria's deputy permanent representative took an even stronger position against the resolution at Wednesday's Security Council meeting.
For more than 10 years in this council, it started with a lie against Iraq when it comes to weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. First, we categorically reject false claims and accusations on the use of the Syrian Arab Army of toxic chemicals against Syrian civilians in Khan Sheikhoun. The Syrian Arab Army does not have any form or type of chemical weapons. We have never used them and we will never use them. My government has a principled and firm position that rejects the crime of use of chemical weapons and any form of weapons of mass destruction by any party, regardless of where, when, and what circumstance and justification. Because we believe that the Middle East should be a WMD-free zone. We have shown full responsibility and transparency in the framework of the agreement between my country, the OPCW, and UNOPS. Baseless politicized accusations were leveled against my country, Syria, and its allies in our war against terror. This was the case since day one, as the media have reported information that is provided by terrorist groups that are designated by the council, especially in Khan Sheikhoun. This affirms that certain parties inside this council, with Turkey and other countries, will continue their politicized and dangerous practices that blackmail my government and its allies and seeks to tarnish their reputation in our war against terror. And they seek to obstruct the talks in Astana and Geneva and to end all prospects of a political solution of the crisis, even if this is at the expense of children and women who are innocent victims of the terrorism that threatens Syria and the whole world today. This includes the role of the governments of some countries that are now forming a choir to accuse Syria without justification so that they would send the dossier of chemical weapons of Syria to square one to serve clear political objectives. This seeks to thwart the openness to Syria, which has started to take shape recently. The head of the delegation of my country in the Geneva talks did express to Mr. Mistura on the 31st of March 2017 that Syria is concerned about reports that speak of the possession of armed terrorist groups in the ruler areas of Damascus, Idlib, and Hamat of chemical toxic material so that they would be used as weapons against civilians. He warned against fabrication of evidence and falsification and any accusation against my country, as was the case before. I would like to remind this council that my government has sent more than 90 letters, the most recent of which was a few days ago, to the Council and the 1540 Committee and the High Representative for Disarmament Affairs and the GIM and the OPCW. All these letters included documented information on the possession of armed terrorist groups, namely Daesh and ISIL, of toxic chemicals that they have possessed through the Turkish territory. In particular, we condemn and we find it very strange that that this coincides with the holding of international meetings on Syria, or when there are talks between the Syrian parties in Astana and Geneva. It coincides with these incidents against civilians. This is in line with the continued cheap political exploitation of some member states of this council, as they use fabricated reports by the media linked to the intelligence bodies of some countries, and they do not use reason or logic or wait to establish the facts. They do not think even for minutes about who is the real beneficiary of using toxic chemicals against innocent civilians. The answer is clear. The main beneficiary is the same regimes that have targeted Syria for more than 6 years. They try now to salvage and rescue the armed groups and their alliance of armed groups so that they would undermine the political process in Geneva and Astana. The scenario against my country, Syria, in the Council is the only explanation of the statements by the President of the Council in the month of March, as he declared that he will stand against any draft resolution tabled by the Russian Federation or China on opening the dossier of the possession of armed terrorist groups of chemical weapons in Syria and Iraq. It's quite paradoxical that France has called for this meeting. They have fabricated, by instructions of the former Minister of Foreign Affairs, Fabius, the incident of the use of toxic chemicals in Eastern Ghouta in August 2013. This is documented in the book by the two French journalists, Le Chemin de Damas. France is politically, legally, and ethically responsible with its accomplices in the illegal international collision for shelling civilians and the destruction of infrastructure. I would like to remind you of the barbaric massacre by French warplanes against 200 civilians in Tukhan al-Kubra village in Aleppo in July 2016, and the recent airstrikes of the International Alliance in Raqqa and Deir ez-Zor that has claimed the lives of civilians, scores of civilians. It destroyed bridges and the infrastructure and the Tabqa bridge. And in conclusion, my government categorically refuses falsification and fabrication of accusations. It nonetheless reaffirms that it will continue to honor its obligations when it joined the Convention on the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. And in our war against terror, that would not stop. We will relentlessly combat terror regardless of all cheap exploitation of the innocent blood in Syria. I thank you.
For more on that, we spoke with our regular political commentator, Du Boisian scholar, Professor Tony Montero. So it looks like they have successfully corralled Trump into adopting the neocon neoliberal foreign policy that now looks indistinguishable from the Obama and Bush administrations in practice on the ground in Syria, at the least.
Mm-hmm. Or indistinguishable in certain ways from what the Hillary Clinton administration would look like vis-a-vis Syria and Russia. However, in spite of this gesture, and really it is in many ways symbolic rather than a full-throated involvement in Syria, i.e. financing and backing so-called moderate rebels and calling for the overturning of the Assad regime up until a couple of days ago. You have right. to remember that a week ago, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said that the policy of the Trump administration was not to overthrow Assad.
Right.
And we have to keep in mind that sometime next week, Tillerson is scheduled to make an official visit to Russia.
Right.
But, you know, this is not yet completely the Obama or certainly not the Hillary Clinton or policy or the extreme wing of the neocons policy. But it is a dangerous step. And the gesture itself is a violation by Trump of what he had promised to his voters.
Yeah, and you know what? Let's give people a little bit of the contextual landscape, and including that. which is a very important part of it, including the people that voted on that basis, who are part of the shaky legs he stands on still right now. We have this allegation of a chemical weapons attack in part of Syria. The allegation by the United States and its allies is that the government did it. The government and Russia say that, in fact, the government hit a warehouse in a rebel-controlled area, and that warehouse was, in essence, a storage facility and factory for chemical weapons that the were being used in other parts of Syria by the terrorists that are fighting, and in Iraq as well. There was a phone call, apparently, or some kind of a communication by the U.S. to Russia saying that in advance that this strike was going to take place, when and where. There were no Russian casualties, and the casualties on the part of the Syrian military, considering they were hitting a military air base, were extremely light. So it seems that perhaps there was also a warning given, perhaps through Russia, to Syria that this strike was coming. So there may be, to a degree, a show for third parties taking place here. And you can see the change in media coverage towards Trump today, and also the change in tone from people like Schumer and a bunch of other Democrats and Republicans like McCain and Graham, who are suddenly Trump supporters, that it's had this kind of an effect. The question is, one, was that the intent of the Trump administration? Two, what does that mean for the actual foreign policy prerogatives that are available to Trump? And what does it mean about any decision-making, also within the context of Bannon supposedly being pushed out in favor of Kushner, which is how it's being portrayed in the media today, and the resignation of Nunes, or in any event, the recusal of Nunes as the head of the Russiagate investigation in HUAC 2. All of these moving parts going on, that's kind of the context that this is happening in.
Yeah, I think what you mentioned about Steve Bannon being removed from the Committee of Principals of the National Security Council, which meant that he would be in on all of the meetings, is significant. Because it appears, and this might be coincidental, and it might not just be coincidental, that it seems that his removal and, in a lot of ways, Michael Flynn's being forced to resign shifted the balance of forces within the White House towards those who want to strengthen America's military presence in both Northeast Asia, that is the Korean Peninsula, and in the Middle East, in Syria. And, you know, in spite of the fact that this may have been a symbolic act, as you point out, there were not many casualties. I don't know how many planes were damaged or whatever. But it seems like we're on a slippery slope. And Trump has seemed comfortable turning over these matters to military people, and not just military people, but those who are itching for confrontation with Russia, because they feel that in Crimea and in eastern Ukraine and in Syria, Putin has gotten too big for his britches, and they want to put him back in some sort of a container. Richard Haass, the president of the Council on Foreign Affairs, in an article in the Financial Times this morning, openly says that we should go forward with a hard military presence in Syria, eventually to overthrow Assad, to create a no-fly zone, and that the Russians and Putin are in a weak position because of the weakness of their economy and the, quote, growing protests in Russia over the last few days. I think that is wishful thinking. I think the Russians are in Syria for the long run. If you listen to not only Putin's statement, but if you read the statements of leading members of the Russian parliament, and people affiliated with various think tanks that deal with international relations in Russia, what they are saying is that Russia cannot back down, that if Putin backs down, it will be the undoing of the Putin government, and it would create a crisis domestically of unimagined dimensions. So I think, as we're saying, Trump has gotten himself into a big mess, not to mention the fact that all of this occurs at the very moment that he's meeting in Florida with the president of China.
Right.
Some say the largest economy in the world. Some say the second largest economy in the world. But certainly in 20 years, it's predicted the Chinese economy will be twice that of the United States. So a nation that's also in a strategic alliance with Russia and has vetoed U.S. attempts to get some U.N. Security Council cover for its aggression in Syria. These two nations, Russia and China, vetoed every attempt on the part of the United States. So it's not 2011 where Russia and China abstain over the no-fly zone in Libya. So we're in a different situation. It's a more dangerous situation.
Yeah, I was listening to John Bolton this morning also, speaking of people coming back from the dead, sort of. And he was saying that, and apparently he has been advocating for essentially the dismantling of Syria and Iraq and the construction of a Sunni state that they can prop up on some of the real estate, or as much of the real estate of those two as they can. This is the idea, of course, of breaking the crescent that would be led by Iran of Shia. And that, of course, ties into the Silk Road that China's building, which goes through that area also, and an attempt to contain China from there. And as you pointed out, this is happening after a very strong statement, which we heard earlier from China's permanent representative to the United Nations on the proposal by the UK to manage this crisis, which essentially accused Syria of making the chemical attack and calls for retribution. And also, while President Xi and President Trump were sitting together, I mean, Trump must have been managing this while he was with Xi.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe he had, maybe he wasn't managing it
at all. That's possible too.
And maybe he had turned it over to the head of his National Security Council and the generals to do what they thought was best. Obviously, the ships and the missiles were already prepared to be fired.
Yeah,
I mean, this was not something that just was decided overnight and planned and boom, we have it. This was something that was already in the planning stages, and they were prepared for it.
Well, and they were deployed. I mean, boats don't fly at the speed of sound, okay?
No, so that's right. That's
they take
right.
time they were to get deployed. To the location.
And, you know, probably, I mean, they were deployed from the time of the Obama administration, but obviously in expectations that Hillary Clinton would have won the election, and then it would be all out,
right.
Bring down the Assad government. But I think Trump has a lot of explaining to do to his voters.
Yeah.
I mean, I was listening on NPR this morning where a Trump supporter who was also a kind of a major blogger sounded a lot like us. He said, this is not what we voted for.
Right.
This is not what he campaigned on. And if this is where he's going, he is going to have to explain that to tens of millions of people, not just his voters, but others who did not vote for him and didn't support him, but did support aspects of his campaign promises, including against intervention and regime change and nation building and for better relations with Russia. And if he's going to go against all of that at this time, well, he's going to have to explain something to a lot of people.
And you know what? To close this, really, let's talk about this, because, you know, I've been saying for a long time, and you too, there's a huge opportunity that was missed, ignored, negated by the anti-war movement, as it's called, and the left, as it's called here, with Trump campaigning on that and winning with that as a part of his platform, and with, you know, the clearly, you know, marked, we've measured that there was a vote of millions of people, Republicans, on those specific issues for Trump. And that was completely ignored, and there was no attempt to engage either those voters or Trump in a way to work at the margins, the leverage that they had, to try to force that policy to be actualized. There was no support for him at all in the face of the attacks on Russia, you know, on his relationship with Russia, as alleged, and this huge missed opportunity. What can we do now? What should we be doing now?
Well, you know, if you could just see what shouldn't have been done and the poverty of what had been done. For example, is there going to be a march of 500,000 women and their allies against war in the Middle East next Saturday?
Right.
Or a month from now? I doubt it. Right. Will there be thousands of people coming out, like the ones who came out and demonstrated at airports to prevent the so-called Muslim ban? Are we going to see? I doubt it. Which means then that much of the demonstrating that took place a month, month and a half, 2 months ago was all about Hillary Clinton and bringing Trump down as part of the slow-moving coup d'etat. I still think we're in the throes of a coup d'etat. I mean, you can have a coup d'etat and still have Trump sitting in the office but not running anything. I think that's a possibility. Let him stay there. We'll continue to beat him down. He'll become a, you know, a convenient punching bag. But the fact of the matter is that those running the government will run it on the same terms that Hillary Clinton would have, Obama did, George W. Bush did, the neocon, neoliberal alliance. I think that hopefully there'll be other messages coming from the world movement, including China and Russia and Latin America and Iran and other places, and that other information will become available to broad masses of American people. I think, as you point out, I have not ever felt that the Trump voters were a basket of deplorables or a collection of white supremacists that were beyond the pale. I think there are still issues upon which the peace movement and those who stand for peace, genuine peace, and sections, large sections of the Trump voters, there's still points of agreement, and we have to find those points of agreement, and we have to leverage them. As you put it, and I agree with this, we have to leverage those elements within the Trump base who voted against intervention, regime change, and war, and for better relations with Russia. They have to be leveraged to put pressure on Trump and his White House. That's the way I would go at it. And I think it's going to be, we got an uphill battle. We got a steep learning curve for the left. Our forces at this point that think as we do, Don, are small. But I think if we have the right tactics, the right strategy, we can, our effectiveness can be multiplied exponentially.
Professor Montero, thank you very much.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.